And welcome to today's Topical Currents Thursday edition. I'm Bonnie Berman. Joseph Cooper returns on Monday. 520,000, that's the number of green card holders living in South Florida eligible for citizenship. Today we examine Miami's Bethlehem Project, which works with businesses, mostly hotels, I guess at this point, to assist their eligible immigrant employees with the citizenship process. It's a project of the National Immigration Forum. Joining us in the studio today, Mark Falzone. He's deputy director of the National Immigration Forum. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks. Great to be here, Bonnie.
Wendy Kalergis is president and CEO at Greater Miami and the Beaches Hotel Association. Welcome to you.
Thank you, Bonnie.
And former mayor of Miami, Manny Diaz. He's senior partner at Lydecker Diaz, a community leader and one of the local spokespeople for the project. Good to have you all with us.
It's great to be here. Thanks. Thank you.
Okay, Mark, let's begin with you and your organization, National Immigration Forum. Tell us about it and how the Bethlehem Project came to fruition.
Sure. Well, we're a nonprofit advocacy organization based in Washington, D.C. We work on immigrant policy. And for instance, right now we're working on a little something called immigration reform.
Yes.
We engage a lot of what some may consider unusual constituencies in that, where we engage traditionally Republican-based folks like evangelicals, law enforcement officials, and business owners. And so it was part of the business piece of this that we said, let's get involved in the immigrant integration debate, where immigrant integration processes where businesses need to have a stake in integrating immigrants into our society, into providing immigrant services. And so we looked back and we realized that 100 years ago, Bethlehem Steel in 1915 was offering what we today call immigrant integration services, but basically they were offering free English lessons to their employees at the work site. And that's really the model that we've developed, and we've named it after Bethlehem Steel, called the Bethlehem Project, where we want to provide immigrant integration services at the work site.
And you say the project is gaining a lot of traction.
Yes, it's gaining quite a lot of traction. We only went live with the project about 6 months ago, and we already have 18 businesses across four cities that are, you know, already engaged in the project.
And the four cities are?
Miami, Los Angeles, San Jose, and Washington, D.C.
Okay, Wendy Kalergis, let's bring you into the conversation. Why was Miami chosen as the inaugurating city for this?
Well, our industry represents over 100,000 jobs, hospitality jobs in Miami-Dade County. And we also have 160 hotels and 200 members that are, you know, associated with hospitality in our association. So some of our, you know, when we were approached, actually the whatever we can do to help our employees succeed is a passion for our industry leaders. So this was really a win-win when we heard about it. The first time we had a meeting with six general managers of hotels, and all of them signed up after 1 hour.
So that, and the partnership came to be in this way? I mean, you were contacted originally by the Immigration Reform Forum?
We were actually we were contacted by the Bethlehem Project.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Okay, and Manny Diaz, nice to have you with us. Tell us about your involvement. How did you get involved with the Bethlehem
Project? Well, I've
worked
with the National Immigration Forum on a number of issues for many, many years. And they reached out to me on this one in particular to assess my interest in it. And obviously, I jumped all over it. And just to follow up on your prior question, the reason Miami got selected as the inaugural city in this process is because we really are the face of the new America. We're 60% of our residents are foreign born. We're the most diverse city in the United States. This continues to be the entry point for the American dream for so many from around the world. And and because of that energy, our economy today is the 11th largest in the United States, 40th largest in the world, and only behind Mexico, Canada, and Brazil in this hemisphere. So what that means is that, particularly in light of this entire immigration debate, is that Miami has shown how a strong and vibrant immigrant community can really help build, work together, and build sustainability and build economic prosperity in a community. And obviously, there's, you know, as you mentioned earlier, there's 500,000 legal permanent residents of the United States who have yet to convert to citizenship. And so all those factors combined made it something that I couldn't say no to.
Let's talk about the hurdles and roadblocks one usually encounters on the path to citizenship and how the Bethlehem Project kind of gets around those, and whoever wants to take that.
Sure. So, for instance, the very model of the Bethlehem Project seeks to overcome one of the biggest hurdles, which is accessibility. And so by bringing services to the work site, what you do is you are overcoming that hurdle of accessibility. You know, folks these days, they may be working long hours, overtime, maybe two jobs. A lot of times they may have a long commute. And with all those factors, having these services available at the work site makes a complete difference. And so, you know, this morning, actually, I was at a work site where one woman who wants to pursue citizenship, she's been a green card holder for 45 years, and she's never had the opportunity to pursue citizenship. But now that it's at her work site and that it's accessible to her, she's able to do that.
And what about financial considerations? How is that being handled?
Well, I mean, that, obviously, that's one of the big stumbling blocks.
Right.
And if, for example, the value that that the forum places on the process, in other words, the process being the pre-screening, which determines eligibility for citizenship, then the assistance in terms of filling out the application for citizenship, and then the civics instruction to deal with the actual questions and answers that, that you're going to deal with in the as part of the citizenship exam. The cost of that is somewhere in the $2,000 range if you're going to hire somebody privately, an attorney. Not that I'm trying to take business away from attorneys, of course.
Of course not.
But of course. But if you were to hire somebody, that's the cost. And here, that service is going to be delivered not only free to the potential citizen, but also free to the business. So, it's a win-win for everybody.
So the businesses don't pay. How is this being funded?
Well, maybe you can.
So we're funded by several different sources, one of which it's all foundation-based, one of which is the New Americans Campaign, of which the Knight Foundation, who's local here, is part of the New Americans Campaign, along with a collaboration of five other national funders. And we also receive funds from other national foundations as well. But one of the key things here is that we believe that, you know, once a business is engaged, they're going to want to pay this forward. And so, you know, we really feel as though we go in with the right attitude, and businesses are going to want to support this program. But beyond that, you know, Manny talked about the impact to employees of the barrier of the money. What we're seeing is amazing. As he said, the thousands of dollars that you can spend on legal representation, that's being provided. The civics, that's being provided. All of that is done. Now, there's still one sticking point, and that's the $680 fee to actually apply for citizenship.
Okay.
That's not covered. But what we're seeing is that the businesses are taking it upon themselves to make that more creative. For instance, one business here in Miami is actually saying, you know, employees, we support you so much. If you decide you want to trade in vacation time for the fee, that's one way that will allow you to finance it. Others are saying, you know what? We want to help this. We want to help you finance this. So we're going to give you a zero interest loan. We'll write the check up front, and then we'll take it slowly out of your paychecks through payroll deduction. So, I mean, it's just been fabulous. And companies are coming up. They're giving us new ideas. So that way we can bring them to others.
Right, right. And this is nationwide. You're in four cities. How are you determining which cities to go to?
So we're in those four cities as a pilot. We've only been active now for 6 months, but the places where we'd go to obviously would have a lot of green card holders, right, in those cities. And so, and folks that also might need help with other services such as English. We try to pair as many services together as possible. Right now we're funded for citizenship services, but we view the Bethlehem Project as the infrastructure to provide a number of legal service, or a number of immigrant integration services to folks, whether that is citizenship, English, you know, if we ever do get an immigration reform bill, perhaps legalization. And so, you know, there's a whole host of services that can be provided through this infrastructure that is being set up.
How is this immigration reform legislation going to affect the Bethlehem Project?
Well, directly, I don't think it affects it because obviously we're talking about two different processes.
Right.
But here, I mean, and I have to make a strong appeal to in the business community that may be listening. I mean, if you think about the potential impact that this could have, not just in terms of improving the employee morale, the employee loyalty that exists within companies, not just by providing additional benefits that individuals will now have, for example, the ability to submit then citizenship claims for their immediate relatives who would automatically become citizens or under 18, all those benefits, but also to the community. I mean, if you think about the fact that we will now have a more educated, more skilled, more committed, civic-minded 500,000 people because
right.
they are now citizens of the United States that can vote. I mean, imagine adding 500,000 new voters to our voting rolls. And the impact that that has in terms of our political influence on a statewide basis and on a national basis, it's all a win-win for us. And as we speak to members of the business community more and more, there's more and more excitement, and they want to participate and get on board. And they are shocked when they actually take the step of surveying their employees to long-standing employees of those companies that are not citizens, and they just can't believe it. You know, it's just an assumption almost that everyone there is legal, obviously, and that therefore they're citizens, and yet they're not. And it's been shocking to see the kinds of percentages in different businesses of employees that have not become citizens.
So let me just reset here. We're speaking with, that was the voice of former mayor of Miami, Manny Diaz. And, excuse me, we're also talking to Mark Valzone. He's deputy director of National Immigration Forum. And, Wendy, we have more questions for you. Kalergis, president and CEO at Greater Miami and the Beaches Hotel Association. If you want to join in the conversation, the number to call is 1-800-743-9576. You have questions, or if you'd like to sign up, 1-800-743-9576. You can email radio@wlrn.org. So, Wendy, who is involved at this point?
And initially, what's neat is the synergy between our small independent boutique hotels and our large chain hotels. For example, the Betsy and the Hotel Intercontinental Miami were the two first hotels to get involved in the Bethlehem Project. So you have an independent as the Betsy, and you have the Intercontinental with the potential for the Bethlehem Project to have Intercontinentals across the country in other cities. And that's where the synergy for us will be great, because we can get involved with our other hotels in other cities.
Right.
And it's really the other thing that I was thinking is, the HR directors are very engaged with this program, with the general managers, and they get confident. You know, you have a lot of hourly employees who were scared probably to even think about the prospect of this. So they get, you know, with the Spanish and Creole workshops, they feel confident. And what's going to happen is you're going to take an hourly employee and develop them into a manager. So the educated, they're going to get more, better educated, better jobs, and also to provide better service for our community, which is wonderful.
So you're taking, excuse me, many low-wage earners who are actually going to, through this process,
and it builds their confidence.
Sure.
You know, and it's just, it's wonderful. I get, you know, emails and calls from our GMs just thanking us for this project. So we're just starting. We're just beginning right now.
So let's give out information for those who are interested in, I mean, I know you're trying to recruit businesses, and I want to ask about Miami-Dade College, but first, what is the contact information?
Our website is www.joinbethlehemproject.org.
And that takes you to the National Immigration Forum website. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay.
And locally here in Miami, people can also call Abby Chase at Chase Marketing. And her phone number is 305-379-0800.
Abby Chase.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's 305-379-0800.
And of course, on our website, we'll have links to join the Bethlehem Project. No, it's just joinbethlehemproject.org.
You got it.
Okay. And so, Manny, what is the role of the International Rescue Committee and the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials?
Well, I don't know what NALEO is. NALEO is not actually delivering direct service, right? Like the rescue mission does.
NALEO is actually delivering direct service in Los Angeles.
In Los Angeles.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not here. Right.
Right. So that's the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials.
Exactly.
But they're not doing that here.
No, here we're using the rescue mission.
Yeah. It's the International Rescue Committee, better known as IRC.
Okay.
They're a great partner here in Miami, and they're the ones actually providing the legal service. You know, the National Immigration Forum, we're a nonprofit advocacy organization. We don't provide the legal services. We make sure we have local partners to do all this. So the Miami project, the Miami version of the Bethlehem Project, is completely Miami managed and Miami implemented. Nobody from Washington, D.C. or any other city comes into Miami. The management is done by Abby Chase, whose number I just gave out.
Right.
And the legal services are provided by Miami nonprofits.
A caller's asking if proficiency in English is a requirement, but you're giving classes in English. Isn't that right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So let's go over. There's a three-step process now for involved in this. Let's go over that three-step process.
Yeah, absolutely. So we start with a pre-screening workshop, where folks come in and they learn about applications, they learn what the requirements are to be eligible, and they learn about what it means to be a citizen. After that, folks, if they are eligible, if they think they might be eligible, they come to an application workshop where they receive in-person that legal assistance with a one-on-one appointment, where they actually have, you know, their own appointment with a legal service provider who will walk them through the process and actually help them fill out the paperwork to become a citizen in this case. And then finally, we then make sure that they get the civics instruction they need. As you know, there is a civics exam that
that a lot of people would not pass.
Yeah,
they had to take it. Exactly.
That's right. And there's a total pool of 100 questions that could be asked. 10 of those will be asked at the citizenship exam. So we want to make sure folks know what they need to know to pass those that exam.
Again,
yeah, part of that process includes reading, understanding, and answering questions in English.
That's right.
Right, but you'll be given instruction in English.
Right.
You're given instruction in English. Again, if you'd like to join in the conversation, we're talking about the Bethlehem Project. It's a project of the National Immigration Forum. And the number is 1-800-743-9576. Email is radio@wlrn.org, or you can tweet us, and that's at Topical Currents. So I saw Miami-Dade College is partnering in this. What is their involvement?
Yeah, no, I wanted to give a shout-out to Dr. Eduardo Barón, the president, who is the, I guess, honorary co-chair with me in this process, because he also immediately jumped on the issue. Someone who's, as we all know, has been a community pillar in Miami for so many years and has done so much work in this area as well. So Miami-Dade immediately jumped, and they are an active, not just in terms of him individually serving as co-chair, but also the institution creating the programs as well for their employees. And they've had numerous workshops where they've had fantastic attendance in terms of the numbers of employees that have joined up. And when you think about who, and by the way, that also holds true for the Visitors and Convention Bureau, who also jumped on immediately. And when you think about who we are and who our major employers are, obviously we're a heavily dependent tourism, hospitality, service area. And so many of our target 500,000 are going to be in those industries, as well as education. I mean, Miami-Dade is one of our largest employers, for example, Miami-Dade College.
Are you looking to get other universities or academic institutions involved?
Absolutely.
We are. We are. We're actually in talks with many of them right now. Here in the Miami area, and we're excited about the prospects.
And so who is part of this now? I know you said the Betsy Hotel and the Intercontinental and some boutique hotels, but you said, I think Patricia had mentioned that Baptist just signed on to this?
Yeah, so actually I was at their very first information session this morning. and Baptist Health down in Kendall. Mm-hmm. And I have to say right away, you know, this was the very first information session, which is always, you know, a little leery. People want to make sure that, you know, they're checking us out, and then it grows by word of mouth. We already had 30 people show up and say, you know, we're really interested in pursuing this. And so that was great for a very first workshop.
Boy, it's really amazing. Again, our number, if you want to join in the conversation about the Bethlehem Project, is 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Is the program customized to each business, is depending on the business?
Yeah, it is. I mean, we really try to meet the needs of both our business partners and their employees, and so we are able to customize it per business. But with that said, there are still the same basic steps that, you know, are part of the program. But, you know, what's great about it is particularly on the benefits side, we can tailor, you know, companies' benefits. So I had one company, for instance, that said, we want to add an English component to this right away. And so we worked with their HR benefits and actually brought a community college onto the site to deliver English lessons on the site that was paid for by their tuition reimbursement program. Mm. And so we're able to sort of nimbly move like that, so that way we can customize this for a business.
Let's look at the participants and more of the benefits of naturalization for them. I mean, learning the language, education, voting. I mean, there are just so many. You want to talk about that, Manny?
Yeah, and in fact, I've seen studies that show that a citizen is going to earn more money and demand a higher wage than a non-citizen. So obviously, that's something that's very important. Obviously, you're entitled to have a U.S. passport and all that means. We talked about the right to vote. Sponsoring family members, immediate relatives get a green card immediately. Permanent resident children under 18 automatically become citizens. And then another factor which is important is that there are a number of government jobs, benefits, college grants, college scholarships, which are limited to just citizens in terms of who can apply. And this now opens a whole world for those individuals that didn't have it before. So there are a lot of obviously very benefits for individuals.
And Wendy, how are you going out? How are you actually soliciting more hotels? What do you do?
Well, actually, we've been working with Abby Chase quite a bit on setting up group meetings. We had one the other day here with a sports team, which was exciting, as well as a couple of hotels, and then we have another one this afternoon. So we're doing individual meetings, and as I said, great response. And then the hotel or the business will fill out a form and send it to Abby, and then they'll get started right away on, you know, starting with the workshops. I mean, wouldn't it be great? Imagine if like the employee applications one day have a line item, you know.
Really?
For the Bethlehem Project. You know, I see it. I mean, it's grown so quickly. You know, now we already have at national chains, you know, we have DoubleTree engaged. We have the Hilton engaged. Trump is engaged. And Shore Club, which is part of the Morgan's Hotel Group. So it's a win-win.
And we're just having this call. Does one have to be employed? Let me see if we can take this call. This is Vito in Pompano Beach. Vito, you're on the air. Vito? Okay. Oh, it's line two? Oh. Vito, you're on the air. Hello, Vito?
Yes, hello, yes.
Yes, I'm calling. Go ahead.
Yes, I would like to know if I have to be employed to qualify for this program.
So right now, what we are doing is we're bringing these services to the worksite. But Vito, if you or if any of your other friends or relatives are interested in accessing these services, again, you can call Abby Chase and we'll make sure that we hook you up with the right folks. The International Rescue Committee, IRC Miami, provides these services. You can easily go down to their office and access these services. Or you can call Abby Chase to get details at 305-379-0800. So yes, Vito, we can provide these services to you as well.
Okay, there you go, Vito. He dropped off, but, you know, Hopefully you heard the information. Again, the website for those businesses who are interested in becoming part of the project, it's joinbethlehemproject.org, which will take you to the National Immigration Forum website. And it's also, and what about the international, what was that, the International Rescue Committee? Can they be contacted directly too?
Yes, they can. Their IRC Miami is here in Miami. And of course, I don't know if I have the contact information on me now.
Okay. And Wendy, you mentioned about a sports team. What's that?
Well, actually, we had the HR director from the Miami Dolphins attend our meeting. They're a member of the association just the other day. So there's interest on their part as well, which is great. It's great to open it up to all the different entities in Miami, because it's just going to increase the numbers of people.
Oh, sure. Involved. And what is your role precisely? Are you the contact person for?
Yeah.
All?
Yes. Actually, what we'll do is we're going to add the link to our website as well, www.gmbha.com. But please feel free to contact me, Wendy Kalurgis, at the Greater Miami and the Beaches Hotel Association, and my email is wkallergis@gmbha.com. I'd be more than happy to assist you.
You want to repeat that?
wkallergis@gmbha.com.
That's a lot. Okay, but we'll have as many of these links on our website as possible, including the International Rescue Committee and the Join Bethlehemproject.org and the National Immigration Forum.
And I can actually give you IRC's local website.
Go ahead.
It's www.rescue.org/Miami.
Rescue.org/Miami. Okay, Paul Leary is going to get all this, and this will all be on WLRN.org, and it'll also be on the Facebook page. Great. Well, I want to thank you all for joining us today. This sounds like just a really incredible innovation. We've been speaking about the Bethlehem Project with Mark Falzone. He's the Deputy Director of National Immigration Forum. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. And if I could also just also thank Manny Diaz, Dr. Padron, and Wendy Kalurgis has been so great in reaching out to the hospitality industry for us. So thank you to all of you.
Okay. Our pleasure.
And that is Wendy Kalurgis. She's president and CEO at Greater Miami and the Beaches Hotel Association. And Manny Diaz is the former mayor of Miami, senior partner at Leidiger Diaz, and a community leader.
Thank you.
Thank you
all so much for being here today. And we have food and dining coming up next. Stay with us.
And we're back. Joseph Cooper with today's topical currents. Well, our food and dining Thursday has finally arrived. I'm joined by colleague, chef, author, syndicated columnist Linda Gassenheimer, also known as the Lunch Goddess. Linda, one of the most fascinating and popular figures in the food world, is here in the studio, and I'm interested in learning more about him.
It really is. You know, Joe, against all odds, how does a little 3-year-old boy survive a deadly disease in his native Ethiopia to become one of America's top chefs? Well, our guest is Chef Marcus Samuelson. He did just that, and he's written a book all about it called Yes, Chef, A Memoir, describing this extraordinary journey. Mm-hmm. He's here to tell us about it. Welcome, Chef Marcus Samuelson.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great to have you with us.
I have to say, that's the best introduction song I've ever heard on the radio. That
has a little bit of Miami.
A little bit Cubano, right?
Yes. Yeah,
oh,
sure.
I loved it. Anyway.
Well, you're making Joe very happy.
Composed by Michael Levine.
Oh, nice. Nice, nice.
Local composer.
Great.
All right. Also joining us is our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype. Fred, what are we drinking today?
Well, I'd like to ask Chef Marcus about wine with African recipes. That sounds pretty challenging.
All right.
Well, I mean, it's not. I mean, South Africa has produced wine for a long time. We've also had wines, a lot of wines from Morocco. So I think Syrah is obviously, if you think red, Syrah always works well with spices. But then you have wonderful Chenin Blanc from South Africa, of course.
Well, let's start with Marcus telling us about this, his life. It's fascinating. First of all, congratulations, because I understand that Yes Chef reached number 7 on the New York Times bestseller list in his very first week.
It did, absolutely, and it's still there. Number 10 right now. So.
Oh, well.
That's great.
Fantastic.
I'll have to bring it up on my Kindle, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. More accolades. You're the youngest chef to have received a three-star review from the New York Times. Mm-hmm. You've written several cookbooks and have your own TV show. So mm-hmm. you've done amazing things. Well, first, let's talk about Yes Chef. Why that title?
Well, Yes Chef is sort of what I, as a chef, first of all, that's what I had to tell my chef for so many years, right? There's no question. It's just Yes Chef. And then
when you're in a kitchen?
Yeah, when you're in a kitchen.
Right.
When you're in a kitchen, it's always Yes Chef or We Chef or Yes Chef. And so I also want to honor that title. And then eventually it became that young cooks were saying Yes Chef to me. And that's not just what they call me, but it's also their responsibilities when you're owned up to Yes Chef. So there's something more to that than just being called chef. There's when somebody calls you chef, that means that you're guiding that young woman or that young man and mentor them. I've been the mentee, I'm the mentor, and that's what Yes Chef is. It's also a funny story to it is when I had the chance to cook the steak dinner for President Obama, when one of my younger chefs, Michael, got the chance to meet the president. He got so nervous, so he just yelled out, "Yes, chef!" And everybody, even like Secret Service, was laughing. So I knew then that's the title.
That's the title. Well,
are you easy to work for?
I shouldn't, easy.
Or are you very temperamental?
No, not necessarily temperamental, but easy. Cooking, fine dining cooking, has nothing to do with easy. It's very complex, but it's also wonderful, yum, and delicious. But I think people learn a lot when they work with me. They learn a lot. And I learn a lot from them.
All right. So you have a lot of people saying Yes Chef to you.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, you know, I was riveted by your story, starting with the very first chapter. Explain how you came from Ethiopia to Sweden.
Well, my sister and my mother and I, we had tuberculosis. I was born in a tiny village, but it's a 2-hour drive outside Addis Ababa, the capital in Ethiopia. But back then, we walked. My mother took us on a walk from the village, Abragodana, to Addis Ababa to find a hospital that would cure us for TB. She found the hospital.
She was walking with you as a 3-year-old and your sister a little older in the hot sun with tuberculosis,
with TB.
All 3 of you. Yeah.
And that trip, that journey, the 75 miles, really was the last thing that she did.
How many miles?
75 miles.
Oh, yeah.
So it took days, and then she passed away. We got cured from TB, but, you know, what is a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, where are they going to go? There was a nurse in the hospital that took care of us, and then eventually she set us up for adoption in a Swedish, so we got to Gothenburg, in a Swedish town called Gothenburg.
And the Swedish family, then you grew up there?
Yeah, I grew up in Sweden, and I have a Swedish mother and father.
Amazing story. But how did you get this passion for cooking?
Well, I love my mother, and she did a lot of things for me, but she was not a good cook. She would not even argue that. But her mother was an amazing chef, amazing cook. My grandmother, Helga, she taught me and my sisters how to make gingerbread, how to pickle herring, when to pull up the carrots, how to preserve the apples.
No Swedish meatballs, though.
Tons of Swedish meatballs and gravlax. And it was not just the recipe she taught us. She also taught us about history and the love for cooking and food. And so she was first and foremost my first teacher.
And what did you cook at her side?
We cooked roasted chicken, and then the next day chicken soup, and the third day chicken dumplings. We made a bread, and then the next day breadcrumbs that we used for the meatballs, for example.
A wonderful, wonderful background there. You speak English so well. Did you learn English there? Or?
Well, I learned English in school, but, you know, when you come from a small country like Sweden, you learn English, you taught English early on in school, and eventually I had to go abroad. Like, you know, the journey of a chef is you have to travel, you have to get out, you have to see different cultures.
So you had your culinary education, though, in Sweden. And then where did you go?
Then I got a scholarship to go to Switzerland, and then eventually to France. Eventually, I got to the 3-star Michelin restaurant of Georges Blanc, which my most successful year was when I got the license to work for free for a whole year.
Wow.
Yes, chef.
And Georges Blanc, that's a famous, wonderful restaurant.
Three macarons.
Yeah. So you worked in all these countries. How did you come to the States?
I always felt that my ambitions, you know, in these places, I was the only black cook. Mm-hmm. And my ambitions of being a chef not just a regular laborer. I felt, you know what, I have to be in a country, in a city that would be open to that. And I felt like I had to move to New York. So I wrote three letters. I wrote to...
You felt New York was more open to having black chefs?
And yeah.
So did you have trouble in kitchens in Europe?
No troubles. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, kitchens are not the most friendliest place sometimes. But it was more about the ambition of being a chef. You know, Europe, a very open-minded place, but not necessarily from there's not that many black-owned or other-owned restaurants, you know, in that sense, you know. But I did feel like the diversity conversation has come much further in America, specifically New York. So I really tried to go to New York. So I wrote to David Letterman and I wrote to Oprah and didn't get any reply. But
you wrote to Oprah.
Yeah, because those were the Americans that I knew. But I eventually got in at the Swedish restaurant called Aquavit in New York.
A very, very well-known restaurant.
And that became my home for 15 years.
Oh, was it for that long?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He doesn't look that old.
I know, he looks like he's 10.
Yeah, I started early.
So tell me then... you opened Red Rooster in Harlem, and you made Harlem a hotspot for foodies. A quote from your book from President Clinton, who also has an office up there, mm-hmm. Says that you reinvigorated and reimagined what it means to be an American. That's a wonderful quote.
Well, I just felt New York is a great city, and people come from all over the world to take inspirations. But yet, the mystique around Harlem and what Harlem is today was two different things. And I said, what better than to open a restaurant there so people can come up and participate in Harlem the way that we do in a regular neighborhood? When you eat in a restaurant, you see people from that community, and Red Rooster is just that. You have visitors, you have New Yorkers, and you have the Harlemite. I'm half a block down from legendary Sylvia Woods restaurant. She just passed away last week.
Oh, my.
But I am on 126 and Lenox Avenue, and she's on 127th and Lenox. I have a good older cousin right next to me.
Well, that was a historical place.
Absolutely. Yes, she's been in business for 50 years.
But the Red Rooster is also...
Red Rooster was definitely a restaurant. It was a bar in the first Renaissance, in the heyday of the 40s and the 50s and 60s. It was a bar on 138th Street and 7th Avenue where the writers, where the musicians and the local people went. And I thought about it. I said, wow, well, I know the writers, musicians and the politicians and the local people. Why not open a restaurant that is inspired by that?
Okay. So and
sounds like a very hip place.
It's fun. It's a mixed, you know, it's a celebration of Harlem. It's mixed people, you know, from all over the world are coming now and the locals. And that's what I love. Mm-hmm.
You seem to have a lot of African dishes that you have in your restaurant and on your website. Where did you learn about African food?
Well, I talk about it, yes, chef. You know, I didn't know about African food until I was an adult. And I learned it about 12, 13 years ago. And I just felt like being a chef is really about getting to know yourself. And being the fact that I have African background, Swedish background, and now American background, I felt like in Red Rooster, I have to celebrate all three. So part of the menu is American comfort food. Part of it is sort of the Swedish immigrant with gravlax and meatballs. And then part of it has these African spices. And I just felt like it's all celebrated in comfort food. But it was important for me to show that narrative that Africa can actually cook modern food as well.
Well, we'll take a short break here. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. And we're talking with celebrity chef Marcus Samuelson. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking with celebrity chef Marcus Samuelson. He's written a book called Yes, Chef. Yes, Chef. A memoir.
Yes.
Yes.
We chef, yes, chef. That's in the kitchen. That is sort of the command. That's what you say, whether you have made mistakes, whether the chef is actually saying, hey, you did a good job. All you say back is, yes, chef.
Yes, sahib.
Yes, chef. Well, it describes his extraordinary journey from an orphaned three-year-old in Ethiopia to becoming a world-famous three-star chef in New York City. But right now, we're just going to go to dinner in minutes for
right.
those nights that you're going to be at home and not going out to a restaurant. And today's dinner is curry-kissed chicken with carrots and rice. Now, this has a dusting of curry powder, flavors this very simple dish.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Not too spicy hot for you?
It could be a little hotter for me, but...
Always.
I'm always that way.
Right. How about you, Linda?
Well, listen to what I did with it. There's no slicing or dicing for this dinner. For the side dish, you can just buy some ready-to-eat shredded carrots, and you add that to the rice after the rice is cooked, but it's still hot, so the carrots keep their crunchiness, the crisp texture. And then I took chicken tenders, which you can buy in the supermarket, and I just dusted them with a little curry powder. I sauteed them in the skillet. I took them out of the skillet, and I added some apricot jam and some cream, so that sort of takes a little bit of the heat away. It's a very colorful dish when it's served with the rice and carrots, and you can find the complete recipe at dinnerinminutes.com. Also, you can follow me on Twitter, at L. Gassenheimer. I don't know, Fred, are you on Twitter still?
Oh, from time to time, at Fred Tasker Miami.
Okay, so Fred, what are we drinking?
Well, you know, Marcus Samuelson appears to be a Renaissance man because he cooks American food, and he cooks, which can be anything, and he cooks Swedish food where I think spices are illegal. And then he cooks African food where spices appear to be required.
Yeah.
So this must lead to some challenging wine food pairings.
Aquavit is the answer to that. Vodka is the answer to that.
Oh, I see. That would work, yeah. But I was looking on the website, and for example, what wine would go best with your African-influenced paprika roasted leg of lamb, which is rubbed with spicy paprika, spicier ancho chili, and exotic cardamom.
Yeah.
And ends up with flavors that are compared to the so-called fiery Mozambique condiment called piri piri. Mm-hmm. What wine could possibly go with that?
Well, there's two things there. Beer would work absolutely incredible, right? That's really, I think, the beverage of choice when it's so hot, and especially summertime. And a michelada would work fantastic.
What is that?
Well, sort of like a Mexican, you know, the spice. You have a little bit of tequila, beer. You can have a little bit of spices like chilies and stuff like that you put in ice.
So it's a drink that's mixed with beer and...
Lime juice, beer, and then you could
spices,
and you could put a shot of tequila in if you wanted. But that
sounds like a beer margarita.
Yes, but then also I think Syrah works absolutely fantastic with this. A Pinot and a Syrah would work with the lamb absolutely. And you know, in South Africa, there's a wonderful blend called Pinotage. And Pinotage would work absolutely fantastic with the lamb.
Now, I gather that you are quite high on Shiraz. I saw an article about a South African wine tasting at Red Rooster, and you had kind words both for South African Shiraz and another wine that's now just arriving in the States, which is Sparkling Shiraz.
Mm-hmm. Just coming.
A Sparkling Shiraz?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And South Africa is such a wonderful sort of place for where spices, food, and wine meet. Because South Africa, you have Chinese, you have Black South Africa, you have Germany and Holland and sort of the British, but you also have the Malay food. And the Malay food really, that's Indonesian inspired. And you have all these cuisines in South Africa. So where the winemakers have been always up to this challenge, what do we pair with that? So you have a bunch of wines in South Africa that matches with spices really well.
Yeah, that's a great thing to have. And one other thing that I found on the website about you, and this may not be too appropriate in this kind of hot weather, but I urge listeners to Google Marcus Samuelson and the words warm spiced wine.
Mm-hmm.
He mixes red wine, and he says the cheaper the better, which I love, with port, vodka, cinnamon, cardamom, anise, cloves, and ginger. Mm-hmm. And then he simmers it with orange hunks and pours it into glasses that already have a spoonful of raisins and almonds.
Oh my goodness.
If there's ever a cold day in Miami, that ought to warm you up.
No, this wine is what we drink. It starts our holiday season in Sweden. It's called glögg, and it starts around December 1, and it's just you hold it like this and you sip it. And
people can't see something.
No, you hold it.
He's holding it and he's sipping it. He's showing.
And your hands are cold, but that's what I mean. And after you've been out skiing or walking on the ice, things like in Miami that you don't do that often. But it's wonderful spiced wine. Does not work in the heat, but it's a wonderful spiced wine that you just get in the mood for the holidays for.
Well, in Miami, what we do sometimes is turn the AC all the way down and light a fireplace fire and have some grog.
That's what would be perfect. That'd be great.
All right.
Anyway, that's it for the world of wine.
Thank you, Fred. Well, let's talk about your connection to Ethiopia, because you left it at 3 years old, but I understand you went back and found your family.
Yeah, my sister always said to me, Marcus, you know, you have to go back and find, we have to go back and find our father. I think he still might be alive. So we connected with an adoption agency, and it took about 4 years, and eventually we found our father.
Because originally you were told that he had died.
Yes, he has passed away.
Yes.
And, you know, adoption is a very complex issue, and you never, it's always sort of, it's one side that's loses somebody or gives somebody up, and another side of that.
You still always had that urge to.
You do. You ask questions. And my Swedish parents always said, hey, find out more about Ethiopia, find out more about your family. And we were more like Swedish teenagers, just like, no, we just want to be Swedish, leave us alone. But eventually, when you go in your 20s, you want to find out more about yourself. So I found my father, and then I found out that I had 8 other sisters and brothers. So now
so
I see
half, my, there were half sisters.
Yes,
and brothers.
And now I see them every year, and I put you know, the kids are now in school and college, some of them, and it's a wonderful addition to my life. And
what does your sister do?
My sister lives in Sweden, and she has a family. She's married. She has kids, and I have 2 sisters in Sweden, and they're both you know, working just regular Swedish families, like the middle class.
Nothing culinary.
Nothing. They cook a lot for their families, and that's it.
So the other sister was a member of the Swedish family.
She was also adopted.
She was also adopted.
Yeah. And that's the thing in adoption, right? Like the fact that my parents couldn't have their own kids was also the biggest fortune for me, for us.
Right.
So there's so many things in life that is sort of random luck that just happens. And I think that's what I talk about in Yes, Chef a lot.
It's fascinating, fascinating book. And it reads very well. I mean,
Thank you.
Couldn't put it down.
Took 5 years to do. How about that?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. One other point I noticed, when I was at the Fancy Food Show, I saw a tea. And the tea was your
Ambessa tea, yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, you know, tea, Ambessa means lion in Amharic, in Ethiopia. And tea is always a ritual, I think, that, you know, people of hundreds of generations have always celebrated, got together, break bread over tea. And it's a classy, something that you can just, you know, when you go to a British afternoon tea party versus there's been a big dinner, you just cleanse with tea. So I wanted to celebrate African teas.
And there's different, apparently there are different flavored teas
absolutely.
According to the different countries you've lived
yes,
in.
Yes, absolutely. So it's a sort of follows the journey that lingonberry green tea and so on.
Well, I was so surprised to see it there and all. So that's very, very interesting. It's been a very, very tasty week. And Chef Marcus Samuelsson, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me. Thank
you.
What's next up for your projects?
Well, you know, the going back to Harlem and keep cooking in Harlem is going to take a lot of my time. So.
Do you have other restaurants there?
Not in Harlem, but we have other restaurants. But Red Rooster is really where I work out.
Now, if I come to Harlem, you'll take care of me?
I'll definitely take
care
of you.
I'll ask for you.
Yes. Okay. Bring the picture with the First Lady.
People should know that you...
I had some old pictures, and I was there with Rosalind Carter, who had been on the program.
Yeah,
right.
And Chef Samuelsson saw it.
All right. So his book is Yes, Chef, a Memoir. And it really is a very fascinating read. Fred Tasker, great advice as always.
Always a pleasure.
And Joe Cooper, you ate well today.
I certainly did. That Dinner in Minutes is right on.
Okay, where can we find it?
Dinnerinminutes.com.
Oh, I didn't know that.
What a pawn I am.
I'm Linda Gass.
What a shill.
Thank you. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me next week for more food news and views.
And that wraps up today's edition of Topical Currents. Thanks so much for joining us. And thanks to our producer, Richard Ives, our technical director, Caroline Brader-Watts, and our online producer, Paul Leary. We have free audio archives and downloads at our website, WLRN.org, including book and author links and more information as well at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow at 1, join Ed Bell for another edition of South Florida Arts Beat, when we'll hear about Share Our Strengths fundraiser, Taste of the Nation, with Alan Susser, and much more. Topical Currents returns on Monday when we explore our obsession with stardom with Boston Globe film critic Ty Burr, who's written Gods Like Us, on movie stardom and modern fame. I'm Bonnie Berman. Joseph Cooper returns Monday. Please join us then and have a great day. Stay tuned for Here and Now from NPR News.